Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome. It's time to learn and improve your American English. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we hear the story of a young man who risked his life when he flew outside of a jet airplane. Then, the World Health Organization reports that the air we breathe is becoming more polluted every day. What can be done about this unhealthful situation? You give us 10 minutes, and we'll give you the answer. As It is coming to you from VOA. International media recently reported the shocking story of 16-year-old Yahi Abdi. The Somali-American teenager survived in the wheel area of a jet while it flew from California to Hawaii. But for Somalis, the story is an example of the issues facing families who fled conflict in Somalia. It shows how many refugees are struggling to deal with change as they get settled in their new home. Yahi Abdi spent 5 hours hidden inside the wheel well of an airplane. The jet rose to more than 11,000 meters as it flew high above the Pacific Ocean. Medical experts say the teenager was lucky to survive the severe cold and low levels of oxygen. One of the questions that rose after the incident was why Yahi Abdi would risk his life. Both his father and mother said extreme homesickness could have been the reason. Law enforcement officials say the teenager had argued with his father's family in California. The officials say he was trying to reach Somalia to see his mother. Abdinur Sheikh Mohammed is an educational specialist with Ohio State University. Speaking in Somali, he says the family structure was broken in general by the process of looking for a second home. Refugees, in general, go through these difficulties in bringing all these families together. In the U.S., we have a family reunification process where family members who live around the world can be brought together into the U.S., even if it takes a long time. Yahi Abdi is not alone in missing family members left behind in Somalia. More than 20 years of lawlessness and civil war has forced hundreds of thousands of Somalis to leave the country. Many say they would have been victims of the violence or starvation if they had stayed in Somalia. The Somalis who travel to the U.S. have largely settled in the northern city of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Americans have generally welcomed the immigrants. But the Somalis have faced difficulties with language and culture. Abdi Salan Sharif Adam teaches English as a second language in Minneapolis. He says he has observed education-related problems in many Somali children.
So some students will come to the school system and they have missed many years of schooling, and they start at an old age in a grade that's higher than their academic level. So there is discrepancy between the educational their ability and the level that they're placed.
He also says the breakdown of the family is to blame for some other major problems existing within the Somali-American community. 20-year-old Saeed Gure is one of three young Somalis struggling to establish his life in the United States. He made a long and dangerous trip to reach his new home. Today, he really misses his parents and family.
I believe that greatest risk is never driving to risk, but when you are constantly feeling homesick, it's very tough. When you are missing your family and they are not around you, it's a pain.
Yahi Abdi also felt that pain. His trip on the plane made him famous, but it did not reunite his family. Like other Somali Americans, he may struggle with longing for Somalia and learning to live in the country that he now calls home. The World Health Organization says air pollution is getting worse in many cities around the world. WHO officials say the worsening conditions are putting the health of millions of people at risk. Christopher Cruz tells us more.
The latest warning comes after the largest study ever done on air pollution levels in cities. The survey involved 1,600 cities across 91 countries. It showed that people in these urban areas are breathing in dirty air. Maria Nira is head of the Public Health and Environment Department at the WHO.
The situation we have in front of us tells us that globally, unfortunately, the situation on air pollution is deteriorating. With an exception on high-income countries, where the situation is, as expected, improving. But these represent only 12% of the population living in cities.
The World Health Organization estimates that in 2012, 3.7 million people under age 60 died earlier than expected because of outdoor air pollution. The WHO says nearly 90% of these deaths happened in low and middle-income countries. The greatest number took place in Southeast Asian and Western Pacific nations. Health officials say bad air increases the risk of death from heart disease and stroke. It also raises the risk of death from cancers and breathing disorders. The study identified a number of possible reasons for the increased air pollution. They include dependence on coal-fired power stations and fossil fuels. The study also blamed dependence on cars, wasteful use of energy in buildings, and the use of wood and animal waste for cooking and heating. WHO official Carlos Dora says, unlike with water or waste management, it is not possible to create technology to capture and treat bad air. But he says cities can take other steps.
Cities have many policies that they do have control over, which is buildings, especially energy efficient buildings, transportation, land use, that do have a very major impact on air quality and public health.
The study finds some cities are improving air quality through different policy measures. For example, city officials could ban the use of coal for space heating in buildings. Clean fuel could be used to produce electricity, and motor vehicle engines could be improved. The survey notes that Copenhagen, Denmark, and Bogota, Colombia have reduced air pollution levels through what is called active transport. That includes increasing urban public transportation and urging people to walk or ride bicycles instead of driving. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Thanks, Chris. And thank you for spending some time with us today. There are two more Learning English programs coming your way just seconds from now. Then, at the beginning of the hour,
you can hear a complete world newscast. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. This is VOA.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. China has rejected more than 1 million metric tons of United States corn since last November. The Chinese government says it is not accepting shipments that include AgriSure Viptera, made by the seed company Syngenta. China says it has not approved importing this genetically modified kind of corn seed. A GMO food has had genes from other plants or animals added to its natural genetic content. America's National Grain and Feed Association says the rejection is costly. It says the Chinese action is responsible for almost $3 billion in losses to the U.S. agriculture industry. Wendell Shaman is a farmer in the central state of Illinois. He also is a past leader of the U.S. Grains Council. He has traveled to China to represent American farmers.
We're the largest corn producer in the world. We're the best supply. We have the best infrastructure in the world to deliver that.
Mr. Shaman says demand for American corn used to feed animals is up throughout the world, except in China. But that country has a very large market for it.
We went from, just minimal sales over there to some rather pretty significant ones over the 2 or 3 years, and all of a sudden this year it's dropped back to almost nothing.
Mr. Shaman says the genetically modified seeds rejected by China are similar to other GMOs in that they have valuable qualities.
They're effective. They help us produce a better quality crop.
He says some GMOs increase the size and quality of harvests at lower costs to farmers. And he says some help the environment because they limit the kinds of pest control needed. Mr. Shaman says he believes Chinese rejection may not result from the product itself.
They haven't approved it, so they won't accept it. They know there's nothing wrong with it.
Craig Turner is a contributing editor for the online publication GrainAnalyst.com. He says when China really needed corn in the past, it would take any kind of corn. Mr. Turner also says corn prices dropped when news first spread of the Chinese rejection. He says corn was trading at about $4.20 a bushel at that time. People feared prices would fall below $4 a bushel. Chinese restrictions continue, but corn prices have since gone up again. Still, Wendell Shaman says, the situation has led to general mistrust of farmers who use the genetically modified crop and grain companies that accept it. And that's the VOA Learning English Agriculture Report. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Today on the program, we look at our natural world. We report on the price of air pollution on human lives. We have details from a different report that says last year was one of the warmest ever. We look at the effect wind farms could be having on the severity of ocean storms. And we tell how scientists are hoping to use the power of the ocean to produce energy.
The World Health Organization says air pollution is now the world's single largest environmental health risk. A new report from the WHO says 7 million people died in 2012 because of air pollution. That is more than two times as many as the number estimated in 2008. Air pollution is an international problem. The World Health Organization says 1 in 8 people die from air pollution, from both inside buildings and outside. It says new information shows air pollution is partly to blame for people dying at an early age from heart disease or stroke. It says other causes of death include cancer and chronic or long-term diseases of the lungs and breathing passages.
The WHO report says most deaths from air pollution take place in low- and middle-income countries in Southeast Asia and the Western Pacific Ocean. About half of the world's population lives in those countries. Many people who live there use open fires or simple equipment to cook food and heat their homes. Health officials say 4.2 million people died at an early age in 2012 because of the burning of coal and biomass fuels such as wood, crop waste, and animal wastes. They say 3.7 million others died in cities and rural areas because of outside air pollution.
Carlos Dora is the WHO's Public Health, Environmental, and Social Determinants of Health Coordinator. He says countries must work together to reduce air pollution because what happens in one country can affect lives in another country.
To resolve this issue, it's quite important that countries, nations, take action, which is more or less coordinated. And the reason for that is that the airshed small particles travel thousands of kilometers. Normally, around the hemisphere, it's traveling east. So pollution in one country will affect a number of other countries downwind.
Dr. Dora says at one time, air pollution was worse in developed countries than in developing ones. But he notes developed countries, especially Britain and the United States, have taken steps to greatly reduce air pollution during the past 10 years.
We know that those interventions work on energy, especially on transportation, better engines, cleaner fuels, more efficient energy technologies, reduction in the need for the use of energy, insulation of houses, etc., clean energy, solar, wind, energy that doesn't use combustion is better than those that do use combustion.
He says measures that help cut air pollution can be costly, but he says they may save money in the long term by lowering health care costs.
The World Meteorological Organization says 2013 was the sixth warmest year since weather officials began collecting temperature records. Recently, the United Nations agency released a report called The Status of the Climate. It shows that many extreme weather events took place across the planet last year. The World Meteorological Organization says 13 of the 14 warmest years on record have happened in this century. And it says each of the past three decades has been warmer than the one before it. A decade is defined as a period of 10 years. The WMO says the 10-year period from 2001 to 2010 was the warmest decade ever measured.
Michel Giraud is Secretary General of the WMO. He told VOA the temperature records show our planet is growing warmer.
Since 2001, the first year of this new century, the coldest year that we have observed since 2001 is actually warmer than any year before 1998. So I don't think this can be used seen in contradiction of a stop in the climate change. The climate change is not stopping.
There were low temperatures in parts of the United States and Canada last year. But Mr. Giraud says that does not mean the Earth is not getting warmer. He says many other areas had higher temperatures than normal. The WMO climate report provides details of ice cover, ocean warming, rising sea levels, and gases linked to climate change. It says these events are all linked and show that our world is changing. The report says many parts of Asia received more rain than usual in 2013. And it says Britain received more rain than at any time in the past 250 years.
The report says there was little rainfall in the American state of California, in the Sahel area of Africa, and in parts of southern Africa. And it notes extremely dry weather was linked to record high temperatures in Australia. Michel Giraud says weather events, such as more intense heat and heavier rainfall or snow, are what one would expect as a result of human-produced climate change.
Wind energy is one of the fastest-growing sources of new electricity around the world. In 2012, more than 150,000 wind turbines were reported to be operating in 90 countries. These turbines use wind energy to produce electricity. Many energy experts support wind farms, which are areas where one or more of the turbines are placed. They say wind turbines help protect the environment while producing energy. Now researchers say turbines placed in waters near the ocean coast might help lower deaths and damage from ocean storms. Mark Jacobson is an engineering professor at Stanford University in California. He studies hurricanes, the most severe ocean storm. A report on his recent work appeared in the journal Nature Communications.
Over many years, Mark Jacobson developed a computer program to study air pollution, energy, weather, and climate. He recently used the program to answer an important question. Can the severity of hurricane winds be lessened by these offshore wind farms?
The study examined three of the most powerful hurricanes to hit the eastern and southeastern coasts of the United States in recent years. The computer program showed what would happen if large wind farms with tens of thousands of turbines had been in the path of the storms. The study found that large numbers of offshore wind turbines could affect hurricanes. Professor Jacobson says he learned that a hurricane's surge could be lowered by up to 79%, and wind speeds could be cut in half or more. A surge happens when winds traveling a long distance over water push waves over land. These surges can severely threaten life and property.
Christina Archer of the University of Delaware helped write the report on the study. She says walls or islands can also slow or cut a storm surge. But she says the research shows the wind turbines can also help. Professor Archer says the wind farms could help prevent storm damage while also reducing pollution from fossil fuels. For example, she noted that placing wind farms near the American state of Louisiana could have helped protect the city of New Orleans from Hurricane Katrina in 2005.
Hurricane Katrina was the most destructive natural disaster in American history. Thousands of people died as a result of the storm. The study suggests that a wind farm would pay for itself over time. The research says it would do so by making power and by lowering hurricane damage. But there has been political and social opposition in the United States to placing even a few hundred wind turbines offshore.
An often ignored form of renewable energy is the power of ocean waves. American scientists say energy from the movement of large amounts of water could provide low-cost electricity and drinking water for coastal communities. The endless line of waves hitting a coastline represents a seemingly never-ending source of energy. But it is not easy to capture that energy because the water in waves moves up and down. It is not easy to turn this movement into a force pushing only one way, like a river or a blowing wind.
Scientists in California have created an underwater device that solves the problem of capturing the movement of the waves. They think it may also solve another problem, making drinking water from ocean water. Marcus Lehman is with the University of California, Berkeley.
Our device has the advantage that we do not directly convert into electricity. We can decide ourselves if we want to produce fresh water or electricity.
Their device moves up and down, just as the waves do. It creates pressure, bringing seawater toward the coastline. This pressurized water can be used to operate turbines, which then create electricity. Or it can be pushed through special filtering equipment that removes the salt and creates fresh water. Marcus Lehman says larger versions of the device could provide power to small coastal areas. He says the ocean could meet growing demand for electricity.
So in general, the available resource of wave energy is in the order of 15% of the global energy demand, which is a lot.
This Science in the News was written and produced by Christopher Cruz. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Join us again next week for more news about science on the Voice of America.